I'm going to take up a couple of things here that there may have been things we were taking up before. I'm not sure, but I don't remember. But maybe every now and then it's a good idea to get together to discuss certain points, which I think are not only important from the standpoint of the children, but from the standpoint of the parents as well, which is usually where the problem is. All right. What I have to say is my own opinion on certain issues that people have asked me to present. So this is what I believe to be true, but at the same time, I'm not trying to condemn anybody, but at the same time, I have to say what I think. Okay. I'm going to discuss a couple of issues here. Homeschooling is one of them, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about the idea of homeschooling and what my thoughts are on it. Another issue is the idea of building self-confidence in a child, encouragement and self-confidence in a child. And then I want to discuss also the spoiled child and the undisciplined child, and get down to some of the ideas about this area and some of the cause for the way people approach these areas and the way they handle them. All right, but before that, I just want to mention something which I think I've mentioned before, and that is the idea of having other people raise your children, farming out your children. And this is today a very common practice. People want to pursue careers, and they find that in order to pursue a career, you have to have somebody hire help to take care of your children. So I just want to mention at the outset that to me that seems the most absurd thing in the world. Because I would say, not only in terms of other people take care of the children, but also the babysitting also comes into the picture. But let me speak first about the idea of having somebody else take care of the children. I would never entrust anyone, and I would say it's a prerequisite. I wouldn't say it's a final requirement, but certainly as a prerequisite, anyone that you wouldn't trust with all of your worldly possessions is certainly not somebody that you should entrust your child with. Okay? So that I would say is a start. And not on a permanent basis, and not even on a temporary basis, not even for an hour. It seems to me that there's a...
Hello? Hello, Ben?
Yeah, I'm calling up here.
Seems to me that certainly you shouldn't treat your child in any less manner than you would treat all your worldly possessions. That seems to me to be a given premise. So again, it doesn't make any sense to me that a person would entrust their child to somebody that would not entrust all their worldly possessions with. And I think it's a tremendous contradiction in this society that people will, if a person is running a business, they have certain requirements, and usually a pay scale indicates the level of, a pay scale in a society usually indicates the level of responsibility and performance, somehow reflects in some manner, the level of responsibility and performance. And yet, people will take individuals that are least qualified and couldn't get a job anywhere else, and they will take such individuals and have them raise their children. I mean, a person that wouldn't be qualified to run a pet shop for a day will be entrusted with raising children. Just doesn't make any sense to me. I think it's an unanswerable contradiction in our society, how our society looks at raising children.
Can you please engage your mute buttons? You can hear all the little chat, the clatter in the background. Thank you.
That it seems to me, I mean, an unanswerable contradiction, as I said, that you take the least qualified people in the world, people that couldn't get a job anywhere, and these are the ones that that people hire to take care of their most prized possession, their children. Does not make any sense. I think it's a terrible mistake, and I think that untold harm comes out of that. Now, I'm not saying in every instance, I mean, but I would say that it would be, you have the same chance as if you took a large sum of money and just gave it over to some irresponsible person. And you may come home and find out you have a fortune, but usually you'll find out that you've lost your investment. So I would say that over here, we have to treat it with the exact same way. The exact same way. That doing something like that is completely irresponsible and nonsensical, and it's something which people pay a very high price for. Unfortunately, because a human being is complex and is not something that is easily understood. I don't think anybody knows what goes on in the mind of a child under the age of one at all. And because of that, many times you don't see the ill effects till years later, usually around puberty. So people can fool themselves into thinking that no harm has been done. But the harm emerges years later. And the price is simply the ruination of an individual's life. So I think that's something that that should really be considered, and to me the premise goes without saying that to act foolishly and stupidly with regard to the children is not going to give you beneficial results. So as enticing as it is to pursue a career and to give your children over to somebody else, to me it's the most foolish thing a person can do. And even a babysitter. Under the age of four, especially, I would say that to entrust your child to a babysitter would require, before you do that, the greatest care and the greatest thought. Again, just a start, as a start. Anyone that you would not consider to give over all your worldly possessions to, you should not even think about entrusting your child to. Okay? And even somebody that you would give over all your worldly possessions, so you have to realize the child is just not a worldly possession. The child is very complex and the Selma of a king, the marvel of God's creation, and something that has to be treated with the greatest awe and concern. So that's what I would just start off with as a premise. And again, I mean, the price that you pay for these things, you don't realize, unfortunately, a human being doesn't react instantaneously, and you don't see the harm for years and years. But the harm is done, and the price will be paid, essentially by the child, but also by the parent. So now, yes?
Can you elaborate a little more? Precisely like the person engaged in danger, either alone or sometimes together with a mother, what types of harm do you, what types of parenting errors do you occur? Just to be not clear.
There are so many things that just to point to one, which I think people are starting to discover nowadays, where they put these cameras on the people that take care of the children to see what they do behind the backs of the parents. I mean, those type of things, traumatic things like that, which obviously, I mean, just simply you don't even have to discuss it. Kind of harm can be done in those situations. But aside from that, even if, and there I think a person should be very, very cautious, because the way a person acts towards you is no indication of how the person acts when you're not there. And people feel, people have a feeling that they know other people. This feeling is an illusion, because they're judging it totally on how the person interacts with them socially, on a social plane. But that's only one plane of human behavior, and it gives no indication of how the person acts when this interaction is not taking place. And that's really that's really the concept of an evet. An evet is a person that acts in a certain way towards his master, but that's in the relationship to his master, which is an essential relationship, and not the way the person acts in relationship to reality. The reality principle is very, very small. The only reality is how they interact with the person that is above them. It doesn't have to be a real evid. It could be a person that works for you. Same exact idea. Same thing. So I would say that people over here, people always assume, everybody assumes they know psychology, and everybody assumes that they know other people. But it's a false assumption. It's an illusion. And it happens all the time in life, how people see when they get involved with other human beings in different relationships, and they see that they never could believe that person could do whatever they ultimately do. They never could expect that. But the reason is because we all have this illusion that we know other people based upon our interaction with them on a social plane. And it's an illusion. It's absolutely no indication of how that person will act. But all the causes for the way they act are absent. Namely, when the presence of the individual who they want to impress is not there. It's not in the presence of that individual. So, I mean, now I understand that with the new technology and equipment, people are putting monitors and cameras in their homes, and they're very surprised to find out what happened. But that's it's a horrible thing. A child is traumatized and done untold harm, and the earlier it's done, the worse it is. But there is a period where, with very, very great difficulty, you can undo some of the harm. Now, that's the most you could ever do. But then there's an earlier period where you can't undo any of the harm, because it's inaccessible to you, and certain processes that have to take place, especially in the first year. These processes, if they're interfered with, and what happens is that the whole flow of energy is interrupted and can't follow the normal channels. So, and certainly in cases of trauma, I mean, that's where things like that can happen. So again, I say that it's extremely dangerous to entrust a child with anyone, even though you think you may know them. Unless you really do know them, which I'm not saying is impossible, but I'm saying if you really think of all the people you know, and then you start thinking about how many people you feel, you feel that you really know, you're going to get down to a very small few. And then even in those few, if you realize that you don't have accurate knowledge over there either, then I think you're going to be excluding very, very many people. You'll be left with very few. And I think that's the only approach. But I think that also, another thing is that if a person really wants to raise a child properly and has the knowledge of how to do so, anyone that has that kind of knowledge realizes that it's knowledge that's not easily come by, and certainly the people that you're entrusting a child with do not have this kind of knowledge, and therefore they raise the child in ways that create tremendous damage. I would say to have ordinary people, have very bad ideas, especially people that have misguided religious, crazy religious ideas that they live by, and certainly have other bizarre ideas and ideas which are complete distortions of reality, that these ideas will always come out. in the way they relate to children, in the way they attempt to raise them, and will be extremely harmful.
Okay.
Everybody's familiar with the term repression, but I don't want to get into too much into areas where. Where a word makes you think like you really understand the whole thing, but, you know, a lot of words are bandied around. I mean, it doesn't mean that people really understand them. So I don't want to, I try to avoid sophisticated terms. But people who live a lifestyle that's based on false ideas, false religious ideas, one might think that's very distant. What do I care what their religious belief system is? And how's that going to? Why can't they just take care of the child? But the answer is that there is a very, very subtle transference that goes on between the one that the child looks up to as a pedagogue and a teacher, and the child themselves. And this subtle transference that takes place is maybe subtle, but the human mind picks up, and especially a child, picks up on every little thing in a very sensitive way. And therefore, ideas that seem far removed from the actual process of raising children are, in fact, very, very closely related. So that's why I say a person's religious belief system, which seems removed from how you're raising a child, taking care of a child, playing games with a child, is not really as far removed as people think, and does express itself, and does impress the child. And if it's not proper, then it will definitely harm the child. Okay, do you understand what I mean? Did I answer your question?
What if they have a parent is where they're alongside the character?
Obviously that's better. Obviously that's better. But, you know, everything... See, the problem is everything is very particular, and it's hard to give general... you can give general column, but you can't go beyond general column. You can't give general column in specific. I mean, that's... that doesn't work. So I can't speak about a specific situation, but I can just give you the general principle. I would say again. I mean, if you want to use a measuring tool, I mean, I would say it would be analogous. Although again, it's a crude, very crude measuring tool, but it'd be analogous to how you run a business, and you're running a business, and you have everything down to perfection, and then you have somebody else work alongside you. I mean, you have to, just to use it as an analogy. Again, it's a crude analogy because it's dealing with a human being, which is not a business, and it's not a computer, and it's a very, very delicate organism, and there's no comparison. But I'm just saying, the reason why I mention that muscle is because it seems in that muscle it becomes very clear that how much harm could be done. You let a person run a part of your business, you're there alongside them. Okay? So, That I would mention first as a very, very basic, simple idea, and one which our society contradicts tremendously in terms of how they view it. But at the same time, I can't see any escape from the contradiction. That to take the least qualified people in society, people that could not even get jobs anywhere, and to say that they're fit to raise children is to me like an insane kind of idea. Okay. But again, I mean, that's just... I mention that because I just want you to realize that society is a very powerful force in everybody's mind. But you have to recognize when society does something crazy, you don't want to join it. Okay. Now... let's now discuss the alternative, raising your own children. Okay, that's that's not so easy either. All right. Let me start with the... there's been a lot of discussion around the yeshiva, you know, people involved with yeshiva, about the idea of homeschooling. Okay. And I mention it because a lot of questions have come to me. And I think that there's a misunderstanding here. You see, again, it always comes from the source. It's always because people underestimate what a child is. I mean, what a Tzelem Elokim in its earliest stages of unraveling what exactly it is, and how delicate an entity you're dealing with. And people always apply very simplistic rules and make judgments based upon very superficial information. But people do that all the time. I mean, in medicine, for instance, you have many, many instances like that. Like when people are convinced that diabetes is caused by consuming sugar. Of course, sugar is found in the urine. Sounds logical, but completely wrong. So you can't just apply these simple kind of conclusions when you're dealing with the human being. But it's bad to think even if something is good. I think it's bad to overestimate the good thing, and to think it's good for reasons that it's not, or that we have no knowledge of. Okay, that's also bad. You have to have an understanding of something. You have to understand it properly. And even though something is good, to think that it's good because of reasons that don't warrant the that explanation, then I think it's equally bad. So let me talk about the idea of homeschooling. Okay, the idea of homeschooling is not a tool to produce certainly not a tool to produce a brilliant child, an outstanding child. It is not. That's not the thing that's going to do it. And it's not something that even is good to produce. To produce an attitude which I think most people in our yeshiva would call a love of learning. I don't think it's that simple. Okay, and I know many people that homeschool their children, they find that the children have a more positive attitude towards learning, that they enjoy it more, or they're impressed with the fact that the children enjoy going to the library and looking up things, researching things, and they enjoy the studying, which is certainly good, but that is no indication that the child will be a lover of wisdom. You want to make that clear. You see, again, people like to boil things down to a very simple formula, but and people have a tendency to look at great thinkers, and try. People have always tried to figure out what makes a great thinker. And you see, this is something which the society at large has been involved in very much too. Many times we don't realize, how we're affected by the society. We're just copying the society. We don't realize it because we block out what they're doing. We see that they're doing the same thing. We just block it out. So you have to be aware of what you're doing, and you have to be aware of what society is doing, and you can't block out your own motivations or block out the activities of society in your mind. And I mean, there was a time not too long ago where people were trying to do the same thing. They're taking children and trying to teach them how to read at very early ages. And they succeeded having children read at the age of 2 or even younger. And the assumption was that if you give the child a head start, that if the child could read the New York Times at the age of 2, so at the age of 10, they'll be studying relativity. But it just doesn't work that way. It's very simplistic and very ridiculous. And, of course, it's been discovered these methods don't really accomplish anything. So there is a tremendous desire on the part of parents to produce an unusual child, and in parents that care for the children. And then you have the, of course, that parents just don't care about the church. But I'm not talking about those. I'm not talking about those kind of parents. But all these methods backfire, and they backfire because people try to apply again this simplistic kind of reason, which is completely absurd. But I just want to point out, as an example of this, that the interest that a child, let's say of 8, 9, 10, and the favorable attitude that a child at that age that they have towards learning has very little to do, very little if not almost nothing to do with an intelligent individual that pursues knowledge and is involved in a love of ideas and a love of knowledge, which is a very rare person, you see. But this interest, which would appear, people would equate the two and say, well, look, if the child is interested in knowledge and study, and we've removed a lot of the negative forces, so aren't we succeeding in producing a child that will love learning? The answer is no. The answer is no. The answer is that there's nothing in common, almost nothing in common, between these two phenomena. In other words, the phenomenon of a young child that is interested in looking up something in the library and a great thinker that is internally compelled to pursue ideas and can't sleep at night because they're tied to thought. Those are two different things. Two different things. You see, and vice versa also, that if you take some people who are outstanding thinkers who have gone through systems that are terrible, you see, nevertheless, they emerge as thinkers. And they haven't been stopped. They haven't been stopped by that. So it shows you something. It shows you that the internal forces that create a truly great thinker are not so simple. Not so simple. You don't turn them off so simply, and we know of no way of turning them on or engendering such a kind of phenomenon in a human being. You see, that's it's a very, very dynamic kind of a thing, and it can't be explained simply, and you can't really do anything to produce that. And even though you may think that you're accomplishing that because the child has a positive attitude towards learning, you really aren't, because that stems from very deep waters, very deep forces inside the human mind, and you can't just simplistically create it. It just can't be done. You know, there's no way of doing that. So while in homeschooling, you might be able to avoid some of the negative influences of our educational system, of which there are plenty, and I do agree with that. But I do not think that, I think a parent will be deluding themselves if they think that they can somehow or other magically turn on, because they remove some bad influences from the conventional educational system, that they're ipso facto turning on the forces of the inner personality that drives a person to become a great thinker. I don't think that is, superficially, it looks similar, but in my opinion, they have nothing in common. Almost nothing in common. Now, again, I don't think it's a good idea to take a child and put them into a situation of negative influences. I mean, simply, I just don't think it's a good idea. But I don't think that at the same time, I don't think, and this I think is a big misconception, that by removing negative influences, you're producing a child that has an internal drive to uncover knowledge. The internal drive to uncover knowledge stems from the very, very deep, powerful sources in the human mind. And these are like very superficial things that that you accomplish in a homeschooling situation if it's done properly. It's superficial. They have very little in common with really the deep elements in the nature and the character of a human being. It's not the same thing. So, again, I think it's very bad for a person to delude themselves and to overestimate certain good things. Maybe good things, but you have to have an accurate perception of what ways they are good. They're not good. If they're not good in the way you think and you're overestimating them, I think that you can run into serious trouble. And we'll get into that a little bit more as we go on. But as a premise, I would say, and again, I would point to some of the most remarkable thinkers of the world that have had very poor conventional educational backgrounds and experiences, and nevertheless, they didn't stop them from becoming great, great minds and great thinkers. So you see, these forces aren't turned off so easily. They aren't turned off so easily, and I'm not saying they can't be turned off, but they aren't turned off very easily because they stem from something deep within the human personality, something which we don't really understand. I mean, we don't really understand what that is. But this much we could know about it. It's something that's deeply rooted in the human personality. And it's not going to be done by just removing certain superficial negative influences. Again, should a person remove negative influences? I say yes, a person absolutely. She always tried to remove negative influences. It's just a logical thing. You know, there's no reason to subject the child to things that are not good, are not productive. But it's a practical, it's just a piece of practical advice, like any other practical advice. You don't put obstacles in the way of anybody, and it's not an intelligent thing to do. But is this a kind of a panacea that is going to help you really to produce a great mind, a great thinker? Absolutely. It has nothing to do with it. Little or nothing to do with it. I mean, essentially nothing. But I would say, again, I mean, it always makes sense to do that which is intelligent. But if a person has to weigh, that's why I say, on a practical level, once you realize it's a practical matter, so you have to weigh it. You know, it's not something that you have to homeschool your kid. Otherwise, it's going to make a difference between a child being going to Elam or being an ordinary person. That's not going to make a difference. That's absolutely not going to make a difference. Okay. Any questions? Okay. In the same manner, yes.
How does that translate what you're saying to so having someone else watching the child? You know, obviously the teacher is
There's a big difference. There's a big difference between entrusting your child, especially under the age of four. Where the whole learning process I mentioned before, you know, traumatic events, and also under the age of four, the child is developing its energy systems and its outlets. For instance, a child makes a transition from a little bit we do know about a child makes a transition from an internal world when it comes into this world, their own internal world. And then it starts moving outward for satisfaction from relating to somebody outside the self. So they move from and again, very little is known about this internal world and about this transition. But one thing we can know is that if this transition is blocked, and the child goes back into the world of the self and can't move outward, that tremendous harm is done, and it could be a permanent kind of a thing. So there, when you're entrusting your child in the very early stages, under the age of four especially, where these transitions are being made, if you block one of these avenues, then you could close down something forever, and it can never be retrieved. Or you could partially close it down. So that's totally different than a child of six or seven that's in a school classroom situation. That's completely something completely other. Okay. By that time already, the child has already reached a certain degree of how their energies are dispensed, and that's not going to change basically. So there's a tremendous difference between us here. Tremendous difference. Okay. Even an untoward classroom situation is just a superficial kind of a thing. It's not really, doesn't really strike deeply. It's superficial. It's, again, it's not good. I don't advise anybody to subject their children to, you know, bad experiences. I don't think it's intelligent. But I don't think that it's certainly not something that can't be overcome. And it's not going to stand in the way of the powerful forces that create a great thinker. Those are different kind of forces. So, Dewey in his educational system did a lot with that, you know, on taking children and putting them in situations where they liked it, where they're very happy and experimenting and things and following naturally. Didn't produce great things. It doesn't produce. As a matter of fact, there's a point where it just retards the development. So it has nothing to do with a great thinker. A great thinker is a different kind of thing. You say that a great thinker is born rather than made. I don't know. I don't know enough to answer that. But it certainly has very little to do with the superficial conditions that the child grows up in educationally. It has very little to do with it. Nothing. I don't think it has anything to do with it. Okay. Yes?
What about, like, the
okay, I'm going to get to that. I'll try to cover that. Okay. All right. So that I think is it is very important, and I think it's dangerous. Again, as much as a person would tend to believe that if you overestimate a good situation that's good, I think it's dangerous. I think it's almost equally dangerous, because once your goals are wrong and your sights are incorrect, then mistakes, serious errors are committed. So, again, I think if anybody thinks about homeschooling, they should have a correct idea about what it can do. I mean, if you want to create a more pleasant environment for your child, maybe that's the best thing. But in your situation, you have to really know, you have to know the child also, you have to know the specifics. It's not just a rule. But if you think it has anything to do with producing an outstanding intelligence, it has nothing to do with it. That's not where it lies. And it's true you'll find children that are homeschooled on the whole, from what it seems, that they do like learning much more than children that go to school, because in school there's discipline, and in homeschooling there isn't, and it gives them a more favorable attitude towards learning. Which I say is good, but it has nothing to do with creating great people. Nothing. That's not where it's at. Okay? It doesn't mean that at 20 years old, this child's going to be involved in learning and love learning, and the other child that went to school is going to be turned off. Not true. There's nothing to do with it. That's a completely different force. A different force inside the individual than is the rare individual that has a deeply rooted love for knowledge and learning. It's a very, very complex kind of a thing. It's like a Band-Aid type of situation. It has nothing to do with that. So I think that, anyone that's thinking about homeschooling their children, they should give that thought and realize that that's not going to make the difference. Okay. Not going to make the difference. And also another thing you have to realize is that a few years of learning at the age of 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 can be quickly accomplished in a very, very short time at the age of 18. So in terms of the knowledge, I don't think it makes, even though you may have a head start, it's not gonna, in the long run, it's not going to make any difference. I understand that they say a lot of homeschoolers do better at entrance exams in universities and things. That may be so, but I don't think it means that in the long run they're going to be better. They may have a head start, they may be doing a little better, but it doesn't even make a difference in terms of the long-term personalities that are produced. Not going to make any difference. Okay. So it's important not to overestimate these things. let me get down to some of the pitfalls, you see, and some of the things that you could do to harm your child. Some ways you can turn somebody off. Or if not turning them off, again, I mean, I really think that the forces of that are at play in creating a really great thinker, it's hard to turn them off, very, very difficult. But there are certain things that I think are harmful. And usually the harmful things are those things which the parent tries to employ in order to succeed at the goal of producing a really great thinker. Okay? And there, a tremendous harm is done. I'll just give you an example. You mentioned about teenagers. I think it's very bad. You see, let me just deal with the idea of most people feel they have to give their child confidence and encouragement to make them feel that they have courage in themselves, courage and confidence in themselves. And they consider that a very good thing, because they think that the person is confident. So, okay, social confidence is important, but more important is intellectual confidence. That's more important. A person can be socially awkward and intellectually very confident. So you see a lot of times, you see people that have great minds, and then people they interview them are very awkward socially. But that has nothing to do with the intellectual confidence. Intellectual confidence is a different thing. So social confidence is more of a superficial thing, but in terms of what we're discussing here. But not that it's not an important realm in its own right, but that's not what we're discussing up here. But getting down to the idea of giving a child confidence, there is something which most people think is good and I think is very harmful. And that is, people think that if you give the child a head start and you make them feel confident intellectually at a young age, and you say, oh, that was great, that's a great idea, that's a great svara, then this will result in a child that's confident intellectually. So it seems to be like a very simple notion, simple premise. Again, it's wrong. Not just is it wrong, it does exactly the opposite. And I'll explain to you why that's so. You see, and that's why it's bad. I've seen a lot of times people think that if you take a child at the age of 8 and teach him an era of height, that this somehow or other will get these categories in his mind, so he'll be able to succeed later in life. We'll have a little bit of a head start. See, a head start is a dangerous thing. I'll tell you why. First of all, you accomplish nothing by doing that. You do not accomplish anything by taking a child and giving him ideas that are beyond his reach. Because the whole concept of learning is that it's an internal process. So what you're doing is you're really disrupting a natural internal process. And what you're doing is you're not allowing the child to pursue his own foolishness, which is good for him. Because the way we advance, any of them, because I'll say, any of them, Zelcha the Torah, or anything, Nichshal by Mechila. It's a rule. You have to make mistakes. And if you don't allow the child to correct these moves in their mind, they never will correct them. If you try to short-circuit the process, you're doing a disservice to the child. But it may sound very intelligent, giving him concepts at the age of 8. But what you did really is you did not allow the child to try to pursue his own avenue and make mistakes and make corrections, and therefore the child is just trying to mimic a type of thought, but they're not really thinking. That's similar to a person that in learning, people just say all the Torah. Saying all the Torah, I can't say it's worthless, but any learning will, but that has nothing to do with thinking. Nothing to do with thinking. That's why I've often said that I never heard the Rav say over a Rav Chaim. Never said over a Rav Chaim. Every time he learned, he was thinking it over. It was his own thought process, step by step. Nothing to do with repeating it. And if a person wants to learn how to think, they have to learn how to make the steps And without the mistakes, they just can't progress. So it would be like, taking a child and teaching them how to drive a car. Never allowing a child to learn how to walk. It's a very big mistake. It's a thing that I would recommend everybody not to do. Not to do. If you want to help your child, the way to help him is to allow him to express his wrong ideas. It's simple, wrong, may sound silly, but it's not silly because it's a process that the child is going through. And to try to put him in advanced mode is very counterproductive, very bad. But that's from an intellectual standpoint. And what you're doing really is, at the same time, what you're doing is you're really breaking down the child's confidence in his own thought. Because you're advancing him and you're showing him that if he says this, he's going to sound intelligent. But that really is a total breakdown of his own confidence in his own mental functioning, you see. And that is definitely negative. Definitely a negative. Definitely the wrong thing to do.
How about that extreme of, putting the child intellectually beyond his natural developmental stage, which is obviously dangerous. But how about the child gives a, on a very simple level, appropriate to say, give a good idea which is appropriate for a 7-year-old? A simple answer. Right. To comment, say, that's a nice idea.
I'm getting to the next. Okay. Now, the next thing is, when a child gives an idea, so you figure if the child happens to get an idea that the parent is proud of, so the parent will think there's an opportunity to jump in and to encourage him, you see, and to praise him. So I think it's a very bad thing. Very bad. Why? I'll tell you why. Because, you see, the thing is like this, that parents have to realize that they are going to be replaced. What the parents are in the child's mind is a temporary category. But that category is going to be replaced. And what will that category of the parents, which are the most important thing in the child's life, without a doubt? What if the child is totally dependent, consumes the child. And the parents have to realize that they will be replaced as an institution. And who will they be replaced by? That's the answer. Society. Society. What is society? Whatever society the child chooses to be the important society for them. Okay, that's a matter of the child's choice. But some society. Okay, whatever it is. I don't care if it's a society of free people, but it's a society. Depends. Some people go out into the world is their society. Some people go out into the world of chess, so the chess world is their society. It could be any world. It could be the tennis world, it could be the sports world, it could be any kind of a world. But it's a world that is going to replace the parents. If it doesn't, then the child's going to remain constantly in an immature state, which would be unfortunate. But a healthy child will advance and will replace the institution of the parents with the institution of something which is a society. Again, for some people it could be millions of people. For Winston Churchill it's the world, and for a chess player it's the chess club. Okay, but it doesn't make any difference in terms of the what's going on. What's going on is the exact same thing. So it could be the yeshiva world, it could be whatever world it is. That's a matter of particulars. But it's going to be replaced by, or it could be the world of an individual's chaverim. It could be a few chaverim. But whatever it is, it's an entity. It's an institution. Now, what you do with a child is you're setting up a child for a terrible disappointment in life. Because when you praise the child, so the child enjoys not the idea, but the child enjoys your response. Okay? So you're not really training the child to appreciate chum. What you're training the child to do is to appreciate your response. That's what you're doing. You have to realize that. Looks like the child's getting... You're trying to make the child happy about the idea. No, you're making him happy about your response, not the idea. Nothing to do with the idea. Okay? So you say, okay, so let the child be happy about my response. Maybe he'll be happy with the response, combined with the knowledge somehow, it'll be an overflow from one area to another, which is not true, but, you say, okay. But, you see, It's just like the contradiction of training of a parent trying to train a child to be responsible. So you say, well, if the child's not responsible, so I'll punish the child. So the child responds and becomes responsible. But they're not becoming responsible. You're teaching them to avoid punishment. And that's what they're getting good at. They're getting good at that. They're not getting good at being responsible. It's responsible for something which is self-initiated. That's the idea of responsibility. So you can't really train a person to be responsible. Again, I just want to mention another thing. One of the criticisms of homeschooling is that the child will not be able to socialize properly. Okay, there again, that's a big fallacy. Because the ability for a person to socialize is a result of a normal personality, not a trained response. If you have to respond in a trained way to socialize, then there's something wrong. I mean, you need coaching. That's an unhealthy person. But a person that does well socially is a result of their normalcy. If they're normal, so socializing is a normal, should be a normal process. So by isolating a child from a classroom situation, you're not really harming the child and taking them away from the ability to socialize, because that's just a natural thing, and it's not something that has to be learned. I mean, given certain things that a person, through his intelligence, you know, makes certain adjustments to, but these are intelligent things that any normal person will do. Pick a person that's totally normal and put them in a social situation. They may make mistakes, because practically, you know, but they'll correct it very quickly because their intelligence will come, oh, you don't do that, you do this. You know, so whatever it is, they'll learn how to do that. It's not going to make any difference. Again, that's another total fallacy. That's like the same kind of, and again, you have the same kind of a contradiction in the case where you try to train a child to be responsible. Responsibility should be a normal thing that a person with intelligence should realize that they have to do certain things in order to achieve certain goals. That's responsibility, and that's something which is a normal intelligent person should be able to do if they have a normal psyche. Okay? You're not going to train the person to do that by imposing penalties, just to train them to avoid penalties. So many times we think we're doing things which appear to be training, but really you're not training them at all. You're training them in something else. And that's the same thing where you have a positive response for a child who gave an intelligent answer. You're training them to be contingent on your response and to put a lot of energy into how you respond. Now, you might say, well, maybe that's good. To an extent, it is good. Because a person has to have teachers, and a person has to transfer that relationship to the parents when we transfer to a teacher. And there is a certain element that is good, that a child should want a favorable response from somebody who they respect. That's good. That's true. But you have to know what you're doing. So you're not training the child to appreciate chachma. Training the child to appreciate your response. And that's what is going to happen. Yes?
And what about giving
the child candy? I was trying to get that. Now, so the thing is like this. So now you'll say, so what's the downside? So, but here's the catch. There is a tremendous downside. I'll tell you what the downside is. You take a child that's raised, let's say, in a very closed situation with parents. And the parents, every time the child gives a good answer, the parents, you know, praise them to the hilt. Oh, you're wonderful, you're great, and you're intelligent, you're so smart, and those type of things. So the child is getting used to the idea that they're doing very well and very favorably, you see, in attaining this good feeling, this good response from the parents, okay? But then the child goes into the world. And the child is only, let's say, an average intelligence, which does happen. So what happens is the child goes into the world and expects to receive this kind of feedback from the surrogate parent institution. You see? That whatever they do, they're awaiting a certain response. Wow, that's great. You see? And they're going to be missing that if that doesn't come forth. Okay? So this leads to a very, very unhappy person, because such a person will not be able to achieve that, And they're going to start feeling, if they really are fixated to this, insofar as this has become a tremendous need for them, which the parent has engendered through constantly supporting them and making them dependent on this constant input of praise, you see, when they make the substitution and the world does not do that, they are going to have to be of necessity very unhappy. Okay, and they're going to have to, it's going to have to be a terribly painful kind of enlightenment. And the only way the child will be able to succeed then is if they can undo that early dependency, which most people will not be able to do. So most people will be destined to have a very unhappy life, because they're not going to get that response. When the transference is made to the parents of the real world, you see, they're not going to be getting that input. And you've trained the child to be totally dependent on that, and that's the greatest source of the child's happiness. So what you're doing is you're dooming the child to a life of unhappiness, because it's not going to happen unless they're super geniuses. And I'll tell you something, even a person who is brighter than average, or even a person who's exceptionally bright, the world isn't out there waiting to praise them. Okay? That's just not the way it works in reality. Okay? I mean, Isaac Newton was giving the greatest ideas in mathematics, and his class was maybe had a handful of people. And all the professors in the university knew that what he was doing, and there was no recognition at all. As a matter of fact, if it weren't for one individual, we wouldn't have anything from him. He was going to destroy all his works. So what you're doing is you're creating, again, if the child is average, you understand clearly how the child's life is doing. But I say even if they're above average, it's going to cause them tremendous, tremendous pain in life. Because the reality of life is that other people don't want to recognize what an individual, if an individual is really unusual, they don't want to recognize that. So there's a tremendous resistance to the recognition of that. And that even happens among the most outstanding thinkers. Kal vachomer among people who are above average, or just more, a little more intelligent, or even much more intelligent than the average person. So you're setting up a child for a life of complete unhappiness. Okay, that is the catch. Now you see, it sounds like a great idea that you're building confidence, and at the moment, because a human personality is very complex and not so simple, it feels like it's right, and you even see the results before your eyes. You see a happy child. They say, I've done it. This is it. No, you've just set the groundwork for the worst kind of situation for this person in their life. Okay? That's the irony of it. The irony of it. The unfortunate thing is that the child pays the price. But the irony for... It's an irony for the parent. It's an irony for the parent and a misfortune for the child. Yes?
Certainly that extreme of building themselves up, and then he's going to have a rude awakening come when he opens to the surrogate parent world called
reality
civilization. So the Ram gives four levels of motivation for Lashma. How does that balance out?
I'm not discussing Ram right now. I'm just discussing psychology. That's something else.
Does this apply to a very young child as well, like under four? And also, how does that relate to expressing love for the child? Not related to something great.
That's a good question. I mean, what I'm speaking about is a very specific range. Okay, I have to be careful here, because you know, not everything is interchangeable when you're dealing with human development over a long period. But let me hear your question. Let me see if I can take your question and put it in exactly in the range of what we're discussing. Go ahead.
Like when a young child, let's say under four, does something, not even, you know, obviously not expressing an idea, like an intellectual idea, but doing something that's good and expressing praise for that. And also, how does that relate to expressing your love for the child?
Okay. All right. Let me take up another in another area, maybe we'll be able to get back to this. Sorry, we're still on. Hold on to your question. Yes,
my child is in this school. I think it'll be appropriate. Not supposed to respond at all. We'll okay, look, next topic.
You want to know something? There's no doubt that would definitely be 100% better than no response. You know, I see. That's the thing. The thing is, what I want to share is like this. See, praise is a catchy kind of a thing, and I'll explain to you why. Praise, I would say, if a parent never praised a child, they would indubitably produce a much, much better child than all these attempts. Okay? But, see, let me say something to you. You see, a child gets messages. You can't hide your underlying motivation from a child. It just can't be done. And let me give you another example. You see, like a spoiled child. Okay. Now, the spoiled child, Freud mentions that every neurotic is a spoiled child. Okay. Spoiled child is very bad. Okay. But it's a spoiled child. Starts off as a spoiled child. But I want to explain to you what I think the reason is. See, I don't think the reason is so much. It is true that a child looks for gratification, and what Freud held was that if the child always, for some reason, by the way, Freud is always associated with undisciplined children. You know, not disciplining a child. That's the worst thing you can do. But I'll get back to that. But that's not really, had nothing to do with any of his ideas. It's just something that people wish that was his idea. Those were his ideas. But they weren't. Nothing to do with it. Not that, on the contrary. His idea was that if you give a child immediate gratification for what they desire, they're going to get used to immediate gratification, and they'll never be able to accomplish anything in life, because life demands that you have a deterred gratification. Okay, you have the ability to think in the future, to plan 10 years ahead in life. People that plan, are able to plan in advance are the ones that are successful, the ones that need immediate gratification or not. So Freud was of the opinion that it's not good to give a child immediate gratification. And by so doing, you're establishing patterns which will be harmful later in life. And a spoiled child is bad because you're teaching the child to have immediate gratification. Now, granted that I would assume that that's correct, you know, that's true. But I think there's something here more subtle and more insidious. See, I don't think that a spoiled child is harmed so much because of the immediate gratification problem. You know, granted that, you know, you're creating channels of energy dispensation which are not good. But there's a more subtle thing. See, in my opinion, the reason why the spoiled child is destroyed is a more subtle twist that's attached to it. And that is, when a parent spoils a child, especially in a sophisticated environment like Jewish parents, you see, the way they do it is not simply they spoil the child. They don't let the child do anything that they want. They give the child a lot of what they want, but there is a price, a subtle price that the child has to pay. You see, the spoiling is really a result of the parent trying to harness the energies of the child in their direction. So they what they're doing actually is giving the child a very subtle ultimatum. You see, that if you come with me, you're going to get all these things, the parents' love and toys, whatever it might be. You know, but I mean, the underlying thing is the unqualified love of the parent. So the parent gets this message across to the child that you can have what you want, which is the parent's unqualified love, provided you act in a certain way. Now, a parent that people think is good to the child, on the outside, very sugar-coated, see, on the outside, it appears that way to the untrained eye. But in truth, the parent has an agenda, and the parent is subtly using these forces, you see, to harness the child to go the way they want. And the moment, see, the moment they create this closeness and this dependency, and they feel good that they don't have to strike the child or to do anything, you know, that appears rash, but the fact is they're giving very subtle messages, and as soon as the child deviates slightly, immediately a message is sent out that, oh, it's a little turned off now, you see? It's a little turned off. So they create a sensitized child whom they feel they don't have to discipline, but the truth of the matter is this child is being controlled more than people that are unsophisticated and just smack their kids around, you see? The child is under much greater control, and the child has been sensitized because the parent doesn't want to admit that they're really a brutal force that's controlling this child's life. So they create a very sugar-coated situation where, because of the child's delicate nature, all subtle messages come through. So on the outside, it's great because the parent feels they're really wonderful parents. They give the child whatever they want, and the child somehow or other just naturally is a wonderful child. Everything looks great, you see? But underneath the surface, the child is very sensitive. They picked up all these little messages, and to deviate, the child knows the slightest deviation where the parent might just have to just make a facial expression. That could be more devastating to the child than where you have parents that are crude and smack a child or, you know, do something brash. I mean, something completely, you know, that everybody looked down upon, not say, yeah, you can't mistreat a child like that. So it's a very, very, a very distorted kind of a situation. And the child starts, it's not the fact that the child is spoiled. See, this, my opinion, it's not the spoiled, but that's just a question of the deferred gratification or instantaneous gratification. That I think is a minor problem. So what would happen? So the person got a truck driver. Okay, so fine. But over here, this is much more serious. What happens over here is that the child starts sensing that there is a big price that they have to pay. You see, they have to really repress all their energies in order, they're subordinating and suppressing all their energies in order to attain this very happy feeling in themselves. Because that's all the child has, is happy feeling. So, now, with that goes a tremendous resentment, which the child is not even aware of, for being under the strict power and monopoly of the parent. You see? So you have a situation where everything looks wonderful. The parent just gives a wink, and the child does everything that the parent wants, and it looks like a happy child. And at that stage, the child can be happy, because it's before the real forces of the psyche come into play, which is a puberty, and before that, the child has the ability to control a lot of its energies in a way that would give, for all appearance sake, would give the impression that everything is just wonderful. Everything is hunky-dory, everything you want. But in truth, what's going on is a very subtle process where the child is totally controlled and the child is angry and has an unknown resentment for the parent, because the child realizes that there's a tremendous price that they're paying for this showering of affection by the parent. It's a tremendous price. And they sense it. The parent doesn't sense it. They don't know it. But it's there. And that later, in the next stage, where all the forces of the psyche come together, that causes a big problem. And that's something which could turn the child off. I say turn the channel. Look, I'm not talking about the same turning off that I was talking about before. I said those forces you can't really turn off. But you could turn you could turn a child off not by stopping the forces, the intellectual forces, but by creating a pattern of behavior where the child won't want to fall into those, into that kind of activity, if it's an activity which the parent happens to like. You follow? So it's different. It's a you see, most people are thinking very simplistically. They're thinking about turning off the child, you know, in terms of his innate love of knowledge. That I said before is something which is a very powerful force. You're not going to turn it on or off. But what you can do is you can create a child which has such resentment, such unknown to the child resentment towards the parent manipulating and using the child for the parent's own good, which the child is aware of. The child is absolutely aware of. The child is aware that the parent wants, the child, in the child's mind, the parent is someone that wants this child, the parent wants me to be a great thinker. Okay? And the child realizes it's the parent that wants it. And they are imposing this will on me, and I have to be a slave for the rest of my life in order to satisfy my parents' desire. And that's tremendous resentment. So in that sense, you could turn a child off. Why? Not that you turned off his thinking process, you see, but you've turned them away. If your goals are bad, it might be good, because then the child would leave your nonsense and might become a great thinker. But if your goals are good, you're creating a situation where the child is not going to want to pay the piper, not going to want to pay that price, and therefore the whole thing is absolutely going to backfire. The whole thing, that's one way that you can pretty much guarantee to turn off a child from learning. Again, not essentially from learning, but from doing an activity which is endorsed by the parent, because the child absolutely cannot tolerate being someone that's nothing other than a tool to satisfy the parent's imaginative desires. Okay? That's the catch. That's a subtle catch. Yes.
You explained the main feature of the parent, the one that doesn't approve, but the one that punishes. How does that work?
You want to know? You see, let me put it this way.
The unusual, the way that...
It's unusual. I don't think it's unusual at all. I see it all the time.
The way I've seen so far.
I'm telling you, it's not that unusual. See, but let me just get back to my point. My point is, it's the spoiled child, the reason why they're ruined is not so much because of the instant gratification. That's something which is not going to ruin a person. It's bad. It's a bad thing. A person should be used to delayed gratification. That's a much better thing. But there's something much more subtle, and that is the way Jewish parents spoil children is not simply that they just shower them with what they want. I mean, they want them to be successful. So therefore, and success could be anything. It could be learning. It could be business. It could be profession. Whatever it is, whatever it might be. But the way they do it is they spoil the child. But it's not a spoiling. It's really a very subtle blackmail. See, it's a blackmail situation, and the child picks up on it, and no human being wants to be blackmailed. So maybe when they're 8, 9, 10, 11, they don't realize what's going on, but when they get older, they are not going to tolerate it. So that, in my opinion, is the real harm of spoiling the child. That's the real harm. Okay. Well, it's common to parents who are more sophisticated and want success, because success demands much more. You see, if you just want a child to grow up and drink a beer and have a barbecue, so there's not much to do here. You know? But, if you want your child to become a smashing success in this society, so you realize the child has to harness all their energy. This is a big project, but there's a lot of competition out there, and it's not easily accomplished. So this demands really serious work. You've got to really get all those energies in there, and you have to control that situation in a total way, not partially. Yes.
What are you supposed to be doing with your kids when they're 8
That's a good question.
Like, let them fly
by. That's a good question. That's a good question.
That's easier than putting any energy into anything.
That's right. A lot of times that which is easier is better. I mean, that's another premise in the society that's completely wrong. That people think that you have to do a lot. A lot of times, it's like Bertrand Russell one time said, he says they used to think the universe is a dynamic kind of thing. He says now, with relativity, it turns out the planets are lazy. They're just going their own way. So, So a lot of times, just because you think that something requires a lot of energy and that makes it good, that's completely wrong. You happen to be right. I mean, I think that's probably true. The less you do, most of the time, the better. Especially most people don't know what they're doing. So. But yes.
Are we just talking about a situation where the child just gives up an idea to the parents, or is there really any kind of positive activity that the child
Okay. Yeah, I know. Everybody's drawing me towards that thing, and everybody wants to. Okay. But see, the more important is first I want you to understand how these mechanisms work. That's more important than you have to understand what's going on. That's more important. Once you get the mechanism, then we'll get down to the practicality. Okay. Now the question is like this. The question is, let's get back to the question of instilling confidence. Okay, which you want to have a child that's confident in the world and confident in their mind and their thinking and their way of life. I mean, that's a big goal. It's not just a happiness goal. It's a goal in your hadas. I mean, Avraham Avinu would not be able to do what he did if he didn't have confidence in his mind and his intelligence. So obviously he had tremendous confidence in his thought. The way to instill confidence is just the opposite of what we were discussing over here. Because what you're doing by praising the child is breaking down the child's confidence. What you're saying is, in order for you to have my approval, you're wrong. You have to change what you really are, you see? So you're giving your child a message that breaks down their confidence, not that instills their confidence. Okay? That's what you say to the child is, I will love you if you do this, and now I love you. So you think the child, no, what you're showing the child is that the child before didn't deserve any love. You see? That's really what you're showing the child. And now you can get my love. But before, you were terrible. So you're really breaking the child down. That's what you're really accomplishing. But a confident child is based on a relationship to the parent, which is very simple. Which the child simply feels that the parent loves them, and that's not in question. That's not something that's in question. That's it. Just exists. So if you really do love the child and you're happy with the child, that means, by the way, you have to really square it with yourself. I mean, you have to really be honest, because, as I said, any dishonesty in this area is going to result in the child becoming very aware of it. You cannot fool a child. You have to get rid of that idea. But as long as you keep that idea, you'll never be able to do anything. Okay, so don't fool yourself. You can't. People that are very close to you, you really can't fool. You may be able to put on a facade for outsiders, but anyone that's really close to you, you really can't fool. And if you try, you're just going to obviously just destroy anything that might be of value in the relationship. Okay, that goes between spouses and children. You really can't fool people that are very, very close to you. It's nonsensical. Because there's always a transference that goes on between people. And the closer you are, the greater that transference is, and it's not subject to fabrication. You can't counterfeit it. It can't be counterfeited. Okay, so you have to remember that. So therefore, it's very important for parents to sit down and think for themselves that what if my child really does want to be a truck driver or doesn't want to do what I want them to do? I don't care what it might be. Torah is of course the highest goal, but now we're not talking in terms of Torah, we're talking in terms of psychology. So it doesn't make any difference whether the goal is Torah or the goal is to be a great physician. I mean, there's no difference at all, psychologically, in terms of how the child perceives it. All the same. So the only way that a child can feel a confidence in themselves is very simple, is where the child realizes that the parent loves them no matter what, and it won't make any difference. Okay? So that is, if you yourself really think that if your child is not going to be what you want them to be, you will still love them as a parent, you see, then the child will get that message. And then the child won't feel they're in jeopardy. It's very simple. But you have to believe it. If you don't believe it, if you really think, I will only love my child if he's really a Talmud Chacham, if he's really going to be a great genius, so then the child's going to know that. And the child's going to feel very, very insecure. Okay? So you have to really first get it straight in your own head. And that is that this child is not here to serve you or your own fantasies or your own aspirations. That's not what this is about. This child is here because you took a responsibility in the great mitzvah of Kiyum Olam and making sure that life goes on like the Torah tells us our responsibility is, and therefore you've introduced a human being into this existence, and your job is to supply this human, whatever they might be, with their needs, and that's a responsibility between you and God. And that's all it is. That's all it is. If you think it's anything more, then you're really heading for trouble. You have to square that with yourself right away. You got to know what this is. You have to understand clearly what this is about. If you don't have that straight in your own head, you're only going to do damage, and you're not going to fool the child. There's no way. So that's the first thing you have to know. That's it. Bachusa b'grisos avram avinu. That's your goal, and you have to do everything that that is necessary. You have responsibility. And your natural love towards a child is something which is a natural thing that we have in ourselves, that it's an extension of the self, and there's a natural love there, and that's what it is. And this is not a question. It's not something which is contingent or conditional. So you don't have to use artificial means like the moment you resort to artificial means like praising the child for a good svara, what you're telling the child is that you are a tool of my desire. And therefore, you will fall in line, and otherwise, you're not going to get this love that a parent has for a child. So what you're doing is really creating a very scary situation for the child. That is the scariest situation for a child. Okay, that's where you have the fears of abandonment and things like that. That's where they're generated from. See, those kind of situations, which most people do. But the problem is because most people don't understand what their job is as a parent. It's not to produce a godly daughter, not to produce an outstanding individual. It's to produce a human being that lives and acts in accordance within whatever those needs might be, intelligent, not intelligent, high IQ, low IQ. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, that's not the responsibility. It's exactly the same for all children. And if parents allow themselves to take this element and utilize it, employ it, in a kind of an ultimatum, a blackmail relationship with a child, you're just going to harm the child. So that's extremely important. So if you have that before your mind's eye, and if you have it correctly, then I think you'll be doing the best service for yourself and for your children. But you have to really be honest about it. You have to really count the grits with it and see it clearly and know it. Okay? It's something that's not easy, but if you never really tackle this problem, you're never going to overcome it, because it's just going to appear in different forms and different ways, and you're just going to start fooling yourself and saying you're not doing that, but at the same time you will be doing that. So it's extremely, extremely important. Okay? Now what was the question? Now, what was your question?
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that at any age?
Any age. Any age. Doesn't make any difference. Okay. Any age.
My question is similar. If it applies to a very young child, not to the same, and also how that, not just in terms of being praised, but also just expressing love.
There's no reason to do anything artificial. That's my point. There's no reason to think and to do anything other than be natural with your child. You love this child, so that's it. The child knows. As long as you're not doing anything, the easiest thing is the best thing. There's no reason to do anything. That's it. The child knows you love them, and why should they question it? The child doesn't question that type of thing unless you raise the question. You raise the question by praising them. Praising them means you didn't love them before. Now you love them more. Before you loved them less. That's how you're raising this problem. Okay? Absolutely. And it's a natural thing. And the child feels it. And the child believes it. And there's no reason to try to artificially impress the child that you love them. If you have to do that, it's something wrong. The child knows that. There's no reason to artificially. Now the question is, should you praise the child? Is it bad to praise the child ever? Or is it, at certain times, is it good? The answer is very simple. The answer is just act naturally with the child. That's all. I mean, don't use a system of praise. That's exactly what we're talking about. That's harmful. But there's no reason if the child does something that you like and you're happy about it, you don't have to act neutral. You're happy about it. As long as you react in a natural way, that's all that's necessary here. Doesn't matter what it is. See? Exactly. There's no reason to do anything. Just the child knows that you love them, and if you're normal about it, and you're in line with those feelings that you're endowed with, by God, and that's a natural feeling. There's no reason to do it. No reason for it. If you're clear, what?
That kind of,
you see, let's say a child gives you a very smart answer. So you say, don't praise the child? No. If you feel like, just be natural in your reaction. Be natural in your reaction. The child knows that they do certain things that the parents like. Highlights, but it's not going to, you're not making it a sine qua non. This is, without this, you're not going to get my love. The child knows. That's part of a natural relationship, The child says something intelligent, you laugh, hey, that's very good. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. What you're doing is you're acting in naturally in line with the child's development. There's no reason to be artificial about it. No reason to think about it. To try to do anything. But the main thing is, this is all good only if you have before your mind's eye your true responsibility and what a child is, and not that the child is a vehicle of your own fantasy. And that's the basic premise. Okay. Yeah.
Is giving feedback like the same thing when you're placing praise, like for instance, repeating, like telling the child you did this, like is it?
There's no reason for that. Most of these things are done artificial. I'll tell you one thing that's very bad. One thing that's very bad is, and if you have this nature, you really should control it. And that is, people, what they do with their children is, they themselves have a need for recognition, which they didn't get from their parents. So what they do is they use the child to satisfy that need. Like they'll dress a 2-year-old child, in a very, very fancy way, so that then they say, oh, look at it, and people come by, look at the baby. So if the parent is satisfying their own need over there, that's very bad. See, if the parent's just doing it naturally, and again, the child knows, the child can tell. If the parent is naturally, they just encamp at somebody and say, oh, it's a cute baby. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. But if the parent is really deriving satisfaction out of that, then the child picks up that this is the thing to do. You must please other people. If I don't please other people, then my parents are not going to love me anymore. That becomes a very powerful force. That's why I say it's a very subtle process. It's It's very subtle. And how the person really feels about these things is what the child is going to pick up on. Now, if the child sees that the parent gets very excited because other people think that the child is cute or smart or whatever it might be, then what you're doing is you're giving that message to the child, and the child is learning, you must please people, otherwise I'm doomed. Because then my whole support, everything that I have in this world, which is the love of my parents, is gone. So that's really shaking the child at its foundation. Okay? That's a very bad thing to do. But again, I mean, that's why I say that in order to raise a child, you really have to have yourself. You have to have your knowledge of yourself. If you don't have the knowledge of yourself, you can't do it. And there again, I get back to the point of entrusting your children to people, aliens. I mean, people that have no knowledge at all. You're doing a very, very bad thing. Very, very bad. Because most people, as you know, don't have any idea of it. Yes?
And getting back to this possibility, you give this a valid story, and if you should, just
okay,
a half right.
Okay, I'm going to get there. Okay. Now the thing is like this. There's one thing that, again, I mean, people always, this is a very, very emotional area, and most people are very unsatisfied with themselves and, you know, kind of wish that they could start over again or or at least through their children somehow or other correct their own shortcomings and their own dissatisfactions with themselves, mainly. But the thing is, the undisciplined child, there again, people feel that this is they're psychologically advanced and they don't discipline their children. This is completely false. Completely. And I'll get down to, first of all, why it's false, and then also where the subtle damage in this kind of a thinking lies, because there is a subtle damage here. Okay? But first, the fact that it's false. There is nothing wrong with disciplining a child. As a matter of fact, it's a natural process that has to be done. And if a parent doesn't do it, then I don't think the children would physically exist too long if you let a child play in the street and the cars are coming down at 40 miles an hour. I mean, so practically you see that the idea is nonsensical. So disciplining a child is something that's necessary physically, and it's also necessary psychologically. There is no advantage in an undisciplined child. It's just nonsense. Because the world does demand that we control our instincts, and if we didn't, then we'd never get past very early childhood. So this is something which is reality. And the parental situation should really be one that creates a pattern that the child, when they enter the surrogate system, will be ready for it, okay, and there won't be anything strange about it. So disciplining a child is definitely 100% necessary. And an undisciplined child is not good. It's not good from a practical standpoint. Like I said, we have the practical and you have the subtle psychological. But from a practical standpoint, it's not good. And there's no harm in disciplining a child. What's harmful in disciplining a child is not disciplining the child, but being undisciplined yourself, which means that you don't react according to the way your logic tells you should in terms of the child's world, but it's in terms of your world. Like, you're upset, so then you vent your anger at the child. And that is very bad, because then the child has no way of getting any kind of system or consistency, any kind of consistent type of thing that they could attach themselves to. Because the child, in being disciplined, has to have some kind of consistent pattern. But if the pattern is based upon your erratic moods, I mean, then of course there's not going to be any consistency on the recipient of it, namely the child. So the child's world is totally confused. And if it's really bad, then it can be very harmful. If it's a little bit off, you know, it's going to be a little harmful. But I'm just giving you the best possible idea. And